Hi, and welcome back to Amanita Minute, a podcast focused on bringing forth the corners of maternal health and wellness. My hope for this podcast is that it can be a resource for moms and their support groups in times of joy and grief. Today, I have a guest on the show who is willing to share her experience with stillbirth. Stillbirth is classified as the loss of a baby after 20 weeks gestation. While advances in prenatal care have helped reduce the number of late and term stillbirths, meaning births after 28 weeks, annually, this still impacts one out of 175 U.S. births a year. Stephanie, thank you so much for coming on the show today to talk about such a heavy experience and shedding light on this for me and our listeners.
Hi, thank you for having me. Hi, everyone. My name is Stephanie.
I'd love for you to share about you and your partner and how you met and a little bit about how you first came to decide you wanted to have a baby.
Sure. So my husband and I have been together for, oh gosh, I think it's been 13 years now. And we are actually going to be celebrating our 10-year anniversary this March. So we've been together for a really long time. We like to say we grew up together. And we decided that we didn't want children really early on in our marriage. We felt like we had gotten married so young and that we were just kids ourselves. But in 2020, actually probably 2019, but my work situation was not ideal at the time. So in 2021, I guess, right after the pandemic, the height of the pandemic, my husband and I decided that we were finally ready after being married almost 8 years for a child. And so, yeah, I was between jobs. I was just about ready to start my new job. And my husband and I were like, you know what? Now or never. And we were really aware of the fact that getting pregnant is not as easily done as people sometimes make it seem like, and spontaneously getting pregnant is a blessing and doesn't always happen. And so we thought we would start trying, and in all honesty, we anticipated that we would have problems like conceiving. So we started in February 2021, and miraculously, I got pregnant the first time we tried. And I was pregnant with my first daughter, Elodie. She's also the child that I lost.
Is there a reason you thought you might have trouble conceiving? Is it like a pre-existing, or did you just hear from other people that they were struggling?
No, not really. I had had some surgery previously back when we first got married, but that really didn't increase my risks of infertility. But I had seen so many of my girlfriends struggle with infertility and miscarriages. And so, and being a nurse, I'm not ignorant of the complications and that journey. And I work in a high stress environment. And so I think my husband and I were just kind of, let's go in fully aware. And so even though I had no risks, you know, you always have that thought behind your head, like, if it can happen to this person, it can happen to me. So I think we went in just kind of with very low expectations and came back with a beautiful surprise.
Mm-hmm. So how was your pregnancy with your daughter overall?
My first pregnancy with Elodie was uneventful till the last couple weeks of her life. It was actually, I like to say it's like the happiest time of my life. I was just super excited to be pregnant with her. I had started a new job, so it was just like I was embarking on a new journey in many different fronts in my life. A lot of people in our lives have been waiting for us to try to have a child, as intrusive as that may be, I guess, in some ways.
I can relate to that. I'm that way for some people.
Yeah, we've been married for so long. Like, there's so many friends who got married significantly later than us who already had like multiple children. So I think there's just a lot of anticipation and excitement for my first daughter. The pregnancy itself, I was classified as a low-risk regular pregnancy, whatever you want to call your standard frequencies of visits and scans. But I did carry very large. And throughout my pregnancy, even from the beginning, people always asked me if I was carrying multiples, if I had twins. So I had brought that up to my doctor multiple times, like, hey, people keep telling me I look big. Like, when am I ready to pop? And I'm barely in my second trimester, you know. And each time my doctor just told me, oh, people need to mind their business. People are so nosy. And it wasn't until the last 6 weeks of my daughter's life that I was all of a sudden elevated to a high-risk pregnancy. But even then, which I guess I'll talk about later, I don't think they really treated me like a high-risk pregnancy.
Gotcha. First, I just want to ask if you had Elodie's name picked out during your pregnancy.
I did.
You did? Is there a meaning behind her name?
In 2013, I mentioned I had had surgery before. There was a chance that I might not be able to have children after that surgery when I first found out. Everything was benign and really good. It could have been, something bad happened, I could have lost my ability to have children. But I had very much for a very long time was very open to not having children. I was that girl that was like, hey, don't want kids, don't need kids. I'm okay with just being me and my husband. But when all of a sudden realized that that might not be an option, that might not be a choice, but something that you're not given a choice about, sure enough, you kind of reevaluate what you want. I had randomly heard the name Elodie a long time ago, and I don't remember why, but I really, really liked the name. So I always had this like list on the side of names that I would name my children potentially one day. And so Elodie was that name. And actually, more than her first name, my daughter's second, her middle name is actually the name that has the most significance for us. Her middle name is Korean. It means it's Haru, which means one day. And in 2013, when I found out that I had to have surgery, around that time, I had been watching a Korean variety show called Superman Returns. And it's about celebrity dads who spend time with their kids and like build their relationship. And there's a rapper, a Korean rapper, and his daughter's name is Haru. And I like fell in love with this little girl on TV. She was just like so spunky and so different. And I like just, she was a little tomboy and I loved her. And her parents named her one day so that she would live each day to the fullest. I remember that was like so meaningful to me. And so I had that name chosen. So when I found out I was pregnant with Elodie, it was non-negotiable. Elodie's Korean name was going to be Haru. And I actually have a lot of friends from back then who remembered that. So they're like, you named your daughter Haru. And so sure enough, my husband and I had been fighting over names. And Elodie was the name that we both agreed upon. I like gender neutral names. Elodie's obviously super feminine. But, you know, her nickname was Lodi. Her middle name was Haru. And my friends have been calling her Haru since she was like conceived. So, you know, it was her little Haru. And so, that was like the significance of my daughter's name.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah.
That's such a sweet meaning. It's funny because people will ask me like, oh, what's your children's name after? I'm like, nothing. I just like the name. And I like that it's a short name so that I don't have to have two syllables in the name when I'm shouting at them. There has to be a good nickname.
I mean, I guess at the end of the day, in hindsight now, after we lost her, Haru becomes a little bit more meaningful because we only had one day with her.
Yeah, I just feel like that's so powerful. I mean, that name suits her so well. Okay, so you have so much excitement. You have the name ready. You are all celebrating and, you know, you feel like a lot of things are going your way in life, work, everything. When did you start realizing something might be off? I know you mentioned people had some commentary about how big you were carrying.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until, guessing, week 30-ish that they realized something might be off.
So yeah, so my best friend is an OB-GYN. She's a GYN surgeon, but she did her training in OB obstetrics. And she had thrown me a huge baby shower for Elodie. And so she came to New York at Elodie's 28 weeks. And she was 6 weeks behind me in pregnancy, so she too was pregnant. She looked at me and she goes, Steph, you're really taut and really big. And again, I had been saying for weeks, like months, that I was worried that I was too big, and we couldn't palpate my daughter.
What does that mean?
Like, most of the time when you are pregnant, you can kind of figure out where your baby is, you know.
Yeah, like the head, couldn't. Or you feel a limb or something.
Yeah, like I couldn't ever.
Right.
And so she was like, you should ask your doctor about whether you could get a amniotic fluid index reading, which is like an AFI. That's generally because women who are really big like that, if there's no other issue, it might be amniotic issue. So I went to my doctor shortly after, and I didn't actually get a diagnosis of polyhydramnios, which is having too much amniotic fluid, until I think like somewhere between my 30 and 32nd week. And then so starting like 32 weeks, they couldn't figure out what was wrong. They kept telling me everything was normal. And so I started going to be seen by a maternal fetal medicine practice at the hospital that my doctor was affiliated with. And I was going in for weekly tests, measuring a non-stress test. So that's like when they like track their heart rate, and then a biophysical profile, which is a scan just to make sure she hits certain marks to ensure the health of the baby. I was going weekly. And in the midst of all of this, I had told my doctor I never could feel her kick. And of course, I was told, oh, it's because you have too much fluid. And like, that was just every concern I would bring forward was always just written off with, oh, that's normal with your situation. They kind of worked my daughter up for something called esophageal atresia. They thought that she might potentially have an issue with her esophagus and her stomach not being connected. But again, these were all speculations. Like, nothing would be confirmed until she was born.
I'm just thinking back to like my experience pregnant, and I'm thinking back to like the anatomy scan and also the times when they just measure the baby. And I do remember them looking at the amniotic fluid. I don't remember what week it was, but I remember her like measuring out like the volume, you know, doing some calculations to estimate. So anatomy wise, she was fine. It seemed she was fine.
And you wouldn't be able to know an issue. Yeah, like everything was fine. The doctors are supposed to be looking at a stomach bubble. I guess hers was small, but like, again, they didn't really do anything about it. So then they referred me to, I had asked to speak to an attending multiple times. They finally sent a fellow one day, and I got referred to a surgeon. So then here I'm like working up and preparing. My husband and I are like terrified, and we're preparing for my daughter to potentially have surgery when she's born. The doctors never once mentioned risk of stillbirth to me.
Mm-hmm.
That having this much fluid could potentially cause other issues like cord issues or stillbirth. They just told me I was at risk for preterm labor, but that I had to keep her inside me as long as possible because I had to grow her so that she would be eligible for surgery. So that was the only thing they kept pushing me for, was to make sure she stayed inside me as long as possible. It wasn't until after she was born. So I found out my daughter no longer had a heartbeat at 36 weeks. I had visited the doctor and gotten tests done just the week prior. And now that we look at her records, it looks like there was some signs of distress and that things were not done correctly. But she was alive when I went to the doctor on a Thursday for tests. On a Wednesday, on October 20th, 2021, I found out my daughter no longer had a heartbeat when I went to my normal OB visit, and I delivered her on October 21st, 2021. She was born silent.
And you were doing your routines at that point. You were doing your routine checkups. Those are the weekly ones, right? That you just go
No? No, so I was still being seen on a couple weekly basis, not like weekly. So like
once, because they put it as high risk at the
I went to get tests done. It was like pulling teeth trying to get a doctor to see me during those tests. So for like 4 times I went in week after week to get scans done, and like, but each time they were like, "Oh, she's fine. Oh, she's really active." The really active probably was hyperactivity from distress, but that's my speculation. I don't know if that's true. When she was born, we found out she also had intrauterine growth restriction, meaning she stopped growing after 30 weeks. So the last growth check we had on her, she was fine. She was like 40th percentile. And then the whole time while I was going in for weekly checks, nobody had caught that she stopped growing. And so my daughter was born extraordinarily small. I believe it was 3 pounds, 10 ounces. She was really tall. She was really long. But knowing that she had intrauterine growth restriction, automatically, really huge risk factor for stillbirth, she should have been delivered earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that kills me is, had I been admitted on the 35th week, when there, like, had someone actually taken the time to look at my scans and make sure things were okay, even like now, when I went through my second pregnancy and went to the test, you could tell how big a baby is based on the scans. It's shocking to me that the ultrasound sonographers never caught how small she was in the scans. Like, she was actually extreme risk for stillbirth. And so those things were kind of like hushed, and kind of, had I not told my best friend about all of her data, nobody would have mentioned that she was also with growth restriction to me. So these were all things that my best friend actually kind of pointed out. And so, yeah, and part of us think that she probably could have been alive had the doctors acted earlier. And unfortunately, afterwards, the hospital made a mistake and didn't do her autopsy. And so we actually don't know whatever happened to Elodie. She was cremated before we could find out. So we kind of, it's pretty traumatizing, but yeah, like, we don't know what was wrong with our perfect little girl.
It sounds terrible on all angles, actually, because it's awful. I mean, I don't know. This is so heavy. I do the pre-recorded chats, and then I sit with the moms, but I don't actually know the full story. And me being the first time hearing this, I can't imagine how conflicted you must feel inside, right? I mean, in one stance, maybe then in a way you feel a little bit of guilt, right?
Oh,
had
I been louder, terrible.
Had I said more, right? Had I shown the chart to my best friend?
Yeah, no, I'm a nurse. So I'm like, how could I have missed it? And then I come back to reality. I'm like, I'm not a labor and delivery nurse. I'm not a pediatric nurse. I'm not a neonatal nurse. It's not my specialty. And even if I was, it's not my area of expertise, how to read a scan.
You entrust professionals to think of your child as the first priority in the situation, right?
Yes.
And you can only hope that by you going twice a week, someone would have looked a little deeper on a high-risk pregnancy.
I didn't go twice a week. They didn't really deem me as that high of level of need. I went weekly for scans.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't necessarily warrant me seeing a physician.
Yeah.
And my regular OB, I didn't see her very often. And there was a lot of things.
And then I feel like the end is like, you don't even get the closure you need. And not that you can get closure from an autopsy, but just knowing, you know, what really happened. And
yeah, I mean, I know some moms don't want to get an autopsy because the thought of somebody cutting your child open is like heart-wrenching, and it was for us. But also, we wanted to know what was wrong. We wanted to know what happened. Like, why did our seemingly perfect child that everybody kept telling me was fine die? At 36 weeks, I carried her for 9 months.
Yeah.
At 36 weeks, she was fully formed, 10 fingers, 10 toes, beautiful face. You know, like, why did she die inside me? And so, you know, those were just things that we had been struggling with.
Was your husband with you at that appointment?
He was.
You found out?
Yeah, my husband has been with me the whole time. He made it. My husband waited 6 years silently, waiting for me to be ready to have a baby. So needless to say, my husband was extremely excited for Elodie. He got things ready in the house, like, was got things specially made to protect her coming child. My husband, I think even more than me, looked forward to Elodie, and so he never missed a visit.
Right. So when they find out that she has no heartbeat, is it because they're doing the, I forgot what it's called, but the microphone on your belly?
Oh, the Doppler? Or... She had just had a bedside ultrasound next to me just to check how she was doing. And she couldn't find the heartbeat, but we didn't know anything. We're like, how's she doing? Because we saw her outline. We could see her. Okay. She wasn't moving, though. And then she silently left and got another doctor and then told us that there was no heartbeat. And I think... that's when my world ended. I think that's when everything just kind of blacked out. Mm-hmm. I just remember screaming.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like I would be kind of in a state of shock. Like, this is, you know, this is a joke. This is not, this can't be real at this point, right? I mean.
Yeah, they, after I found out, they left me in the room. And then they instructed me to check in to the hospital to get my things and to check in because I would have to deliver her. Mm-hmm. So later that afternoon, I found out in the morning, and then the afternoon evening, I checked myself into the hospital and I got induced and I delivered her the next day.
Did you tell anyone before you went to the hospital? Did you call your mom? Did you... Or did you and just your husband just want?
I told all my family.
Okay.
Tanati's whole family. My husband is one of four children, and their whole family camped out in their apartment. My parents flew in on the closest flight from Chicago, and everybody kind of camped out at our apartment while we were in the hospital.
Yeah. So, I mean, I almost hate to ask this, but you are in the hospital. You're induced. You deliver her. Mm-hmm. They let you hold her.
They gave us, I mean, the hospital I don't think had a very good stillbirth education or program. So like, I've been reading that a lot of hospitals will let you do memory collecting with them, like help wash the baby and all these things. They didn't do that, but they did give me time with her. I have very conservative parents, and so they didn't think it was right for me to stay with her for too long because you know, she is dead and decomposition happens too. But luckily they didn't send her to the morgue that Thursday night. And because I had asked to collect some of her hair, my daughter had curly hair. I don't know how that happened.
From you or your husband?
We have no idea. But she had this beautiful hair and I really wanted, it was like soft, just soft and so beautiful. And so the nurses had kept her in the nursery. And so luckily on Friday, I found out and I was able to be with her for a few more hours before we sent her to the morgue. Collectively, it was still less than like a day, I think. It was like just about a day. And then we got discharged the next day. The doctors didn't feel like it was necessary for me to stay in the hospital. So we got discharged the next day after delivering her. But yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, first of all, even for like any birth, they don't discharge you the next day.
They said it was an uncomplicated birth, and she told me there was no reason why I needed to stay at the hospital.
Did you want to go home?
I didn't know what I wanted, to be honest. My family was like, oh my gosh, you're taking up a hospital room. Now that I have my second child, I realized how ridiculous it was that I got discharged the next day. Especially with like lactation needs and whatnot. But I didn't know that at the time. I was a first time mom. I had no idea what to expect. I just kind of blindly listened to people.
I was like, I don't even think I was like, I was scared to pee.
Yeah.
At that time, right? Like I'm scared to pee. I'm scared to poop. I'm scared to stand up too fast.
Yeah. I had stitches too. I didn't go back to that hospital.
Oh, okay. So you get home. The entire clan is there.
Yeah.
What's first? How do you all move through the experience together? Or do you move through the experience together?
I think we all kind of move through it differently. Everybody was really worried about me. It was so quiet at home.
Yeah.
It's like everything that... It's a newborn period, so like you're expecting to lose sleep because you have a baby crying, but it was like the silence was like deafening. You're up, not because you have a crying baby, you're up because you wish your baby was there. And my milk came in a few days later, but nobody had really prepped me for that. I just had like a postpartum nurse kind of give me like, oh, your milk might come in, you can call the lactation consultant. So I was constantly on the phone trying to get a hold of a lactation consultant, asking like, what do I do? How do you suppress? It came in like a load of bricks. I went to a nap and next thing I knew, my breasts went from like a C to a double E or something ridiculous. Yeah. Like,
and it's painful.
It was so painful. They kept telling me not to express. And so like they were red, inflamed, rock hard. I was getting chills from like the pain and nobody would tell me anything. They just told me, you know, so I was like looking things up. I ended up ordering things on Amazon, like ice packs to kind of help. One person had told me I should bandage wrap, and I found out later you're not supposed to do that. Like,
that's how you get like clogs and stuff. No,
yeah, like nobody told me. They just kind of expected me to just deal with it, and so I just remember that was really hard for me too.
Yeah, that's a really dark period. I mean, even when I was breastfeeding, I felt like it was a really dark period for me.
It's a dark period, and I'm breastfeeding now. So
yeah.
But at least now I have a baby to like relieve the pain.
No, I'm saying I can't imagine like emotionally not being ready. And then also physically, like your body is just like almost betraying you at this point, like doing, you know, stuff. And it's just reminding you that you don't have this baby. And it's also painful. You know, the silence is deafening piece. I feel like part of it is like no one in the house to say what to say, you know, that's part of it too. Like, your baby's not crying, but also no one knows what to say. No one wants to say anything.
Yeah. Everybody kept telling me, like, my mom was like, just bury it in your heart. And I just like hated her so much in that moment for saying that to me.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I don't want to bury this. Like, this is my child. Like, it was just horrible.
Yeah.
You know, they offered postpartum, like the grief, stillbirth grief, miscarriage loss, kind of pregnancy loss group, support groups. Mm. I was desperate to find a therapist. Like, I was just like, I need to figure out how I'm going to deal with this. And ironically, I don't know if it's ironic, but a lot of people reached out at that point. I made a post on my Instagram.
Oh, okay.
Kind of telling people about Elodie's passing because I didn't want to deal with the, how's baby?
Right,
like,
right.
So like, I figured,
you guys must be,
I figured I would rather just have that control of just like disseminating the information myself than to have people like ask me and have that awkward, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You see the blood red drain from their face. I've had plenty of those conversations. And so I had made an announcement and I just had amazing people reach out and share their own stories to me. So just even within my own community, I realized that over the years on all the people I had met, there were many women that had dealt with stillbirth and I didn't know, I didn't know they had lost their first child. And so I had people contact me from college.
Wow.
From my first job as a nurse, like reaching out, like I reconnected with an old colleague. Mm. And so it was just like the strength and the help and support that I received, especially from those moms who had lost themselves, was just like so beautiful and so like tragic at the same time.
Yeah.
And so I'm still forever thankful to those women because their stories is what helped me get through.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that. That's amazing. I feel like I'm always more and more surprised by all the community that is created in motherhood, whether you're expecting or you've had loss or you actually have a baby now and you don't know what to do. I feel like there's this unspoken community that really just turns on once you're in that space. So I'm glad that that happened. And I'm glad there's so many people out there who are open to talking to you about it. How did you and your husband move through it together? Or did you have grief together?
We are still moving through it. I started going to therapy. I have a lot of beautiful friends in my community who reached out. They still give me space to talk about her. my husband and I made the decision that Elodie, even if she wasn't physically here, is still very much an active member in our family. I think my family sometimes gets worried about that, that like I'm not moving on, quote unquote. I've learned that there's certain lingo in the lost community and like different things. And I'm pretty active in Instagram with that. And so I've like follow a lot of like lost mom accounts and stuff. And it's like so crazy how the things I feel resonate the same with a lot of other lost moms, or they'll write something like, oh my God, that's exactly how I feel. But for a lot of us, maybe not for everybody, but I know for me, not talking about her is more painful. You know, people will say, oh, I didn't want to bring her up. Why? If she was alive, you would talk about her. If your mom or dad dies, you don't stop talking about mom and dad. If your husband or your wife or your sibling passes, you don't stop talking about them. So why do you stop talking about my child as if she never happened? My friends still call me Haru Omma, which is Haru's mom in Korean. And I prefer that. And to me, it's so comforting. I have friends who, like, now that I have a second child, they'll like send me a package as like a congratulations. But they don't just call me Elia's mom. They go Elodie and Elia's mom. So like, I think for my husband and I, it's moving forward, not necessarily moving on. We kind of try to incorporate her in our daily life as much as possible. I associate the bright sun when it's like a really bright, beautiful, sunny day. I associate the sun with my daughter. And so I'll be like, oh, Haru's out today. And, you know, my husband even like, was it today or yesterday? We took our daughter out on a walk and he goes, look, your sister's out with us. I think for us, that's how we kind of incorporate my daughter.
Thank you for sharing.
I like to talk. My husband doesn't like to talk.
I'm listening to you because I feel that way too about certain people in my life that I've lost. So it's very interesting. For me, it's like when I see yellow leaves.
Yeah. You have things, associations. Yeah, so, like some yeah. parents will think of like see bunnies and they're like, oh, they think of their daughter. Mm-hmm. But for us, you know, even my second child is her name and everything is kind of based off of her sister.
I see.
And so for my husband and myself, it's we try to keep her present in our life, even if she's physically not here, because she made us parents.
Yep, exactly. So you have a second child, as you've alluded to in this conversation. Was it hard for you and your husband to consider having another child after this?
No. I became really obsessive, actually, after I lost Elodie to get pregnant mm-hmm. again. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is what you felt. I'm assuming most parents feel this way. You set eyes on your first child and you just are so overwhelmed with love. You just fall so deeply in love with that child. Mm-hmm. And I felt that with Elodie and it was like so powerful. I couldn't fathom how much I love this child, mm-hmm. even though she had passed. Like she was like the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. Like my love was so overwhelming. And so I wanted that again. I wanted a child of our own that we could raise together. And so I was like dead set on getting pregnant. Mm-hmm. It didn't take us too long in retrospect of like everybody who's like going through trying. But I got pregnant 6 months after I lost Elodie. Actually, my LMP was her 6 month birthday. And so I found out, yeah, that I was pregnant 6 months and then we have luckily a healthy young girl. So Elodie has a little sister.
For this second pregnancy, did you take different precautions? Did you go to a different practice?
Yes.
was there any special things that they could do understanding your first experience?
Sure. So before we officially tried, or I guess in the midst of trying to be completely frank, I got a pre-conception consultation. And it's basically an opportunity for me to meet with a doctor, an OB-GYN, to see if they're a good fit for me. With my history, I definitely didn't want to go back to the hospital that I had delivered Elodie at. And I had found out about this doctor at Mount Sinai who I heard was a really good high-risk doctor. And with my history of stillbirth, I am forever branded as a high-risk pregnancy.
Mm.
And so I met with this doctor. Her name was Dr. Joanne Stone. And it was like, I'm not religious, but I have faith. I believe in God. And I felt like God had answered a prayer for us. And we found out that she had just started something called a rainbow clinic. And this rainbow clinic is designed off of the rainbow clinics that are in the UK and England. And they're specifically set up to support lost parents, parents who have families who have lost previously. And it was just like a godsend to us. As soon as I got pregnant, I started getting seen by her starting at 6 weeks. I went every 2 weeks, then every week, and then twice a week. I got tests done frequently after a certain point, and I had like different resources set up for me. It was just, the experience was so different. The staff were so kind and so thoughtful. They did so much patient education, and it was like a double-edged sword for me and my husband, because on one hand, it was like, oh my God, this is amazing. On the other hand, we didn't get this reality. And so we realized how much we had lacked from our first pregnancy. But the second pregnancy was very hard. We were very conservative. We didn't tell a lot. We didn't like make a huge announcement. A lot of people were like, oh my God, I didn't even know you're pregnant. I didn't know you had a kid. And then they find out I had a baby again. I think one way we talk about it is like, you feel like you're holding your breath for the whole, however long you're pregnant. And I definitely felt that way. We were so scared we were going to lose her. It was just one day at a time. I like literally I delivered my second child at 37 weeks. And each day was just like, let's get through today. Just get up tomorrow morning. Let's just get through the end of the day. And that was just kind of how I got through my second pregnancy.
Gotcha. Did you have her name picked up as soon as you found out she was a girl?
So,
or did you find out she was a girl?
No. I definitely wanted to know what sex she was because I was like so set on having another daughter. I thought I was going to be a boy mom my whole life. And then all of a sudden now I only want daughters. So my husband chose her name. He wanted the same initials as our first child.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a list of names. I think I just kept going back to this name. Her name is Elia. It means God has answered. We were so scared to name her that because we were like, what if God takes her away too? But then after a certain point, I was like, you know what? Her name is Elia. And if God does take her away, he still answered our prayers by blessing us with her. And so I think for us, that eventually became that kind of perspective. But her name is Elia, and then her middle name is Hanul, which means sky or heaven in Korean. And I told you before, everybody thought Elodie had a twin because I was so big when I was my first pregnancy. But my husband, my friend, and I had said, oh, if we have twins, because this was before, you know, anything, we were like, if we have twins, we'll name her Haru and Hana. You know, they're both gender neutral names. Like, you know, so we had always said that. And so when I got pregnant again, it almost was no brainer. My second child was going to be Hana.
That's a big shift in perception that I think you underrated with her name and you choosing it.
Yeah.
When she was in your belly still. Like, I feel like that's a really big show of how both of you are like trusting God. And even though you had this circumstance with Elodie, you were ready to love again. You were ready to do this again, right?
We just wanted to be parents so badly.
Yeah, but you made it sound subtle, and I don't think it was a small feat to pre-name her. You know, I think a lot of people, even people without loss, are always apprehensive to name the child before they come, right?
We will say we didn't really order anything for her till after she was born. It was actually quite comedic when you think about it. We had like all of Elodie's things. And so just like a week or two before Elia was born, my in-laws finally brought back a lot of the things that were Elodie's because they had removed it from my mental safe.
Right, for sure.
And I had all these things for Ality, but I had lost her at 36 weeks. So like that last stretch was when you typically get all the last stuff that you really need. So like I had all these things, but none of it was like really that useful. So we ordered a ton of stuff on Amazon after Ellie was born. And we didn't even have a pediatrician chosen. So we chose her name, but we didn't have a pediatrician chosen for her. And we're like, oh, shoot, our kid needs a doctor. So, you know, I think there's certain things you do to protect your heart. And you don't realize you're really doing them until in hindsight. Or maybe you do. But I know my husband and I were very scared. We were parents, but we wanted to be like practicing parents.
What do you mean by that?
I forgot. Somebody had said this to me. I forgot who had said it to me. Oh, a girl in my small group, another woman who had lost her child, had said this. But when you're pregnant, they say, oh my God, you're a parent, you're a mother. But then if you lose that child, all of a sudden you're no longer a parent. I think it was somewhere along those lines. I forgot how she had worded it. It was so eloquent. I feel like I'm not doing it justice. But we were parents. Elodie was our child. She was our daughter.
Right.
And yet we didn't have a child to show for it.
Yeah.
And so we were parents, but we wanted to be practicing parents. Like we wanted a child here on earth so that we could actually be like, hey, we're parents too. Mm. Okay. I still get from people when I was pregnant with Elia, they'd be like, oh my gosh, is this your first lost community? Big no-no. Don't ask people how many, what kid this is, what number is this. Often it's very triggering.
Yeah.
And most of the time I'm like, no, this is my second child. And they'll be like, oh my gosh, where's your first? I'm like, she's in heaven. Yeah, and I say it very casually and everybody's like blood drains from their face. I think I'm a little sadistic because I don't mind seeing that. But we just wanted a child and I think that was like our biggest driver. Like my husband and I, like we were so ready for her. And like we got her, but we didn't get to keep her.
Yeah.
And so we just, it was like one track mind in our heads.
Thank you for saying that, because I think that it is a tough distinction to make that people might not be mindful of. And I'm probably guilty of it too. When I find out a friend's pregnant, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited for you to have a baby, like your first baby. And I don't even know, maybe this is actually not their first. Maybe they've had miscarriages in the past and like, you know, this is actually the first one that is coming closer to term, but that doesn't mean that this is the first time they're a mother. And I think it's hard for people who haven't been in the situation and just want to be excited for people not to realize that it can be triggering. So if you're listening, just keep that in mind if you see someone who's pregnant and it might be their first baby, quote unquote. So just, you know, thank you for saying that, because I'm pretty sure I've been guilty of it.
I've been guilty of it. There's so many times now I'm like, oh, foot in the mouth moment. I said I messed up and I had done that before and I'm like, ugh. But yeah, it's different.
Yeah. Do you have a specific message you would like to share with our moms or support groups or anyone thinking of having children today?
I thought about this. I think the big message, especially for moms who have lost regardless of gestation, that their feelings are valid and that it's okay to talk about your child and that they're not alone. Because I think it's a very isolating and alone feeling. Mm-hmm. And that it's okay to talk about your child. Mm-hmm. I still talk about her. I have a picture on my desk of my dead daughter. And people are always like, does she have a picture of a dead baby on her desk? And I just keep, I look at it and it gives me so much strength. It's a picture of my daughter and my husband. He was holding her. And it's like one of my favorite pictures, but it gives me so much strength, especially during my pregnancy. When I was at work, I would just look at it and it'd bring me a smile. And for, I guess, moms or people who know other people that have lost, check in on your friend or your loved one. And if the mom wants it, give them the space to talk about their child. if it's wanted and warranted. I think often we try to fix things. Nobody's going to fix the situation. It's happened.
Yeah.
Just giving someone the space to talk about this loved child is probably the most powerful and meaningful gift you could do for your friend or loved one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for that. Yeah. And, you know, I think to that tune also, it's okay to think about the loss, right? Even if you have a healthy, happy pregnancy later, it's always okay to think again about that loss.
Absolutely. A lot of people think that because I have a daughter now, I'm better. And I keep reminding even my family, one child does not replace another.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I think that's something that's also very important. We don't replace children.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for being so vulnerable.
I really love your perspective on how you're intertwining the spirit of Elodie with your new daughter and the family. And I love how you are so open with it. And I think that you are really providing inspiration to someone who might be listening that you don't know you've reached. So you never know who is in that situation. And this might be the message they need to hear tonight. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate our podcast and share with your community. For more information on Ama & Co, follow us on Instagram or visit our website, amaandco.com. See you next time.